You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Around the Block, presented by Federal Prison Authority. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings. So welcome aboard for another great show. You know, from time to time, we will do questions and answers. We'll take questions from our various platforms. We have a Facebook group, early release Federal Prison First Step Act group. And we posted something, a couple of days ago now. And so we're going to respond to some of the questions that were on there. So,
yeah, we've got some good questions. Some good questions. So the first question was, and although we've talked about this in some different regards, I thought it was important because of the way the question was worded. It said, how much time do you get off your 72-month sentence with Second Chance Act? The answer is you don't get any time off your sentence. The Second Chance Act is actually the halfway house at home confinement authority. It's the law that lets the Bureau move someone from prison to pre-release placement. And that is a maximum of 12 months in pre-release placement. And then on the home confinement side of that, it is 10% of the sentence or 180 days, whichever is less. So there's just, and it gets confusing with, you know, FSA and what you get off and what you don't. And some people don't think about halfway house and home confinement time as part of their sentence, but it is. I just thought it was kind of important because of the way the question was worded.
Right. So. And just to beat a dead horse or almost a dead horse is that a lot of folks with a short sentence, all your FSA time is going to go toward the reduction of the sentence. Even while you're in the halfway house or possibly home confinement, you're still in earning status and your sentence is moving. And so, again, like Susan's saying, for the shorter sentence folks, your entire time in halfway house or home confinement is going to be under that Second Chance Act placement. So that's the real question. It's not like it's how much of your sentence are you going to spend in the community versus how much of your sentence are you going to spend in prison, okay? And so that's where this and we got to do this book. Our graphic artist contacted me, and I said I almost commissioned her to do a cover of a book we haven't written yet on the Second Chance Act, but because I just think it's frustrating because you see this, it's on the computation sheet and all this. You could get up to a year, but you can get zero. And then at the five-factor review, all the personal variables. We've talked about this on other shows, y'all. So anyway, but there it is, right? Because you don't know until case manager puts in the paperwork and they've made some sort of a recommendation based on the five-factor review, and then the RRM makes a decision on how that translates to your placement to the public. So, yeah. That's an interesting question, but 10 days a month for the first 6 months, 15 days are after, you know, and there's some basic calculations, but
that's all FSA. It's all FSA. So I just thought it was interesting how the question was worded. And I think it kind of emphasized this idea that SCA doesn't take time off your sentence. SCA is just the authority for the Bureau to incarcerate you in pre-release placement in a halfway house or home confinement. But that is still incarceration time. That is still part of the sentence. So had some questions about sex offender sentencing that we're not going to get into because Bruce and I aren't lawyers and we're not sentencing guideline specialist, but there were some questions that were programmatic related. And one of them had to do with an individual taking the RDAP program, completing the RDAP program, but because of their instant offense, they are not eligible for the 3621E early release benefit. That is not the, it's not the early release for the drug program. I mean, it is, but it's right. The drug program eligibility is separate from the time off eligibility, the early completion bonus. And the person that asked the question, like, okay, we're at the BP-11 level, like, what's next? You can sue, and you're not going to get anything. The case law related to the 3621E time off is decades old and is settled. And you're, for individuals with sex offenses, they are not eligible. That's just how it is right now.
Right, right.
You know,
so but you can still get into RDAP and you can still participate in RDAP and be in the housing unit and then get a hopefully a fairly satisfactory or an above satisfactory halfway house placement here and there. Sometimes I've seen a few sex offenders get home confinement here and there. It just depends on the area. So,
Some sex offenses still allow you to receive FSA credit, and completion of the RDAP program impacts pattern, which if you're dealing with a sex offense, it's going to offset participating in the RDAP program. It's going to offset some of those points that you're getting because of the sex offender status.
Right, right. Okay.
So, I mean, there is benefit there. And of course, the residential drug abuse program is a high quality, good program. I mean, it is an excellent program. So as a former case manager, I always say, if you need the treatment, go to it. It's not about the time off.
Yeah. I used to do a lot of pre-release programs where I'd fly around and go to certain programs in South Central region, right? And one of my favorites was Three Rivers. And I'd go every year and I'd see the same guys that had taken RDAP, but they had a life sentence. Like, Mr. Cameron, can I waive coming into your class today? Yeah, man. Because, you do pre-release and anybody that was DAP comp had to come, right?
Right, right.
So I'm sitting there releasing people from the gymnasium, waiving, because that just shows you there's a lot of people with 50, 60 years life sentences that take RDAP that are in no way, shape, ever going to be eligible for a time cut, but yet they take the program. All right.
Because it's a good program. Yeah. It really is. Another question. And just as an aside, Bruce and I wrote a pendant article that was published in The Champion, which is a publication, professional journal for the National Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys. And we talked about some of the things in the FSA statute and our ideas of reform for it. And one of the ideas, and we're not shy about it, is we have we have some issues with the disqualifying status based on offense. If FSA is about incentivizing programming and improving future behavior, improving future outcomes, but we're going to put an anchor around your neck based on, yep, there it is. But we're going to put an anchor around your neck for conviction that you cannot go back in time and change. So we kind of have some heartburn and have made recommendations and have been verbal about that in terms of we think the Congress should go back and really revisit the ineligibility due to offense. I would say, and we actually talked about this in the magazine, RDAP is no different. Again, if the point of the time off incentive is to not only incentivize participation, but successful completion, why wouldn't you? Like, what does the offense have to do with incentivizing program participation and better future outcomes?
Do you remember back in the day, you're probably at Seymour Johnson, but we would do financial incentives. Remember that?
They still do those. The phase, the like $25 or something at the end of each completion phase.
Oh, okay.
It is, they actually rolled that into the FSA incentives. So it's all part and parcel, part of FSA incentives. Although they've been doing that, the phase completion bonuses for decades. I remember when I was a CMC at Lee and I'd have to like get the budget numbers for psychology and they'd have to load in their completion numbers. That was one of my jobs at Lee was inmate performance pay.
Mm-hmm.
So another question, also talking about sex offenders, talking about the SOMP program, the residential SOMP program, and you know, why can't that have a completion bonus as well? Some kind of time off your sentence. I agree. Bruce and I take the position consistently that incentivizing program completion that puts you in a better position, deal with your issues, whatever those issues are, and come out of when you release, be a better person. Don't get back involved in crimes. Get with your family, be with your family, and live your life. We agree.
Yeah.
That takes Congress, though.
Yeah.
That's not a real... Now, for those of you sitting there going, well, then they should just do it. Consider the optics. What congressman is going to get up there, and this is unfortunate, but it's true, is going to say, oh, yeah, I support individuals with sex offenses being released from prison early.
Right.
That takes someone with some real intestinal fortitude to recognize that, again, the goal isn't to put an anchor around someone's neck, you know, put that scarlet A on the chest and say, oh, you're forever doomed. What we're looking for is future behavior and not going down that same path. So anyway, this was a new question. We haven't had this one before with other Q&As. What is the best way to approach requesting a warden's exception for FSA? Excellent question. So just kind of to backtrack and just kind of share, when folks are getting time credits, they have to have minimum or low risk. Well, for folks who are medium or high risk, they're earning credit. They're just not able to use the credit. And we've seen some cases with some folks with a lot of credit that they've amassed for program participation, and they can't touch any of it. There is a provision within the policy, within the law, as well as within the policy. And I would encourage those who are thinking about it to look at the policy. It's online, it's publicly available. And there's a whole section about what the warden should be looking at. And it has to do with clear conduct and not having public safety factors all kinds of, there's not having negative stuff, but also then having positive stuff. And if your loved one is sitting there and feels like they're a good candidate, you know, they've made a good faith effort toward lowering their recidivism rate. Sometimes folks were just hell on wheels for the first 30 years of their life, and now they're sitting in prison and they just don't have a long enough sentence to have their time. Those points come down far enough, despite good stuff, despite good programming. So you would submit a cop-out, an inmate request to staff member, through your unit team. And in there, I would, aside from just, dear warden, I'm requesting, I would talk a little bit about what you've done and what you've accomplished. You know, I've completed these programs. I completed RDAP. I completed Challenge. I've completed the Brave program. I've done these three classes. I'm in GED right now. Like, sell yourself. Like, what are the good things that you've done? I've maintained clear conduct. Should you be submitting a request to the warden if you just had a cell phone chat 15 months ago? Probably not a good idea.
No.
Probably not. It's not going to go anywhere. You can, but is it realistically going to go anywhere? No. So you need to keep yourself in a good position during your incarceration. Stay out of trouble. Do the programming. Do the good stuff. Submit it through the team. Important to note here, the team cannot deny it. The team can only recommend approval or denial. It then has to go to the warden And the warden
That's right.
will then approve or deny it.
That's right.
And like everything, if it is denied, you can file an administrative remedy.
Right. Now,
excuse me.
You don't want to wait and all of a sudden be too short.
Right.
Okay. So when would be the kind of the lastest?
You know, it's a case by case thing. The sooner
right,
you're earning
it,
yeah. So if I'm sitting there and maybe I started out as really high and I've completed, you know, maybe I'm sitting in a penitentiary, maybe I'm sitting in a medium, and I've completed a residential program. Now I'm working on the clear conduct. That's a given. You got clear conduct and you just graduated. Maybe you just graduated from challenge and you're in a penitentiary. Maybe you were in the Brave program. Maybe you've done RDAP and you still got some years to go. That I just graduated. Look, I've got 2 years in, 3 years in. I've got clear conduct. I've done this and this program and I just graduated from RDAP. Hey, boss, that is the time. Don't wait to the end. I would recommend people try earlier than later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but definitely.
You know, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if you're 10 years from release.
No, no, I wouldn't wait. Yeah, I mean, it's just,
you know, timing is everything.
Right.
So, you know, I wouldn't be requesting it 6 months after you walked in the door.
No.
Having at least a year in it, have at least a year in custody.
But this
12 days,
this
2 months. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's say you've been down 5-6 years or whatever. I'm just pulling this out. And you've been good. You've been programming. No incident reports. Doing a good job or working Unicor grade, this, that. I mean, you're just busting. You're doing good. And then, you know, sometimes the warden said, you know what? Come back in a year. See what I mean? Like, okay, I'm not going to accept it now, but maybe let's revisit
this. Let me keep an eye on you.
Yeah,
absolutely. 100%. But yeah, always sooner than later. And in the ward, like I said, you make a really great point. The warden could come back and say, not now, but you know what? Let's watch it for a year.
But you got to be careful because the wardens transfer every couple of years. So you might want
to. They do. But
yeah.
Although, you know, in recent years, I've seen some wardens hang around a lot longer. So
I know. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe not always a good thing. But anyway, but yeah, obviously sooner rather than later. And I'm a firm believer in, you know, going right out, right, you know, after the completion, successful completion of one of the larger programs. You
right.
know? And obviously you have to be eligible to start with. The warden cannot make an exception if you are statutorily prohibited because of the offense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if it's just about your risk or on your risk level, that's different. So that was a really great question. We actually haven't had that asked. Okay. So another good question. And I picked it also because of the way it was asked. And the person said about having, wanted to know what could be done about being given a halfway house date only to have it taken away because they've got a home and a job and being placed in home confinement.
We talked about this last week and we'll continue to talk about it. Go ahead.
So I think this is more about they were recommended. Most halfway house RRMs, unless something happens like you get an incident report, right? Once they've processed your date, like they are reticent to go back. Like there's got to have been an error. There's got to be a problem. There's got to be new information.
Right.
To just give you a halfway house date and then come back later and change it and make it home confinement really isn't happening. What's more likely happening is the case manager recommended a 7-month halfway house placement. I'm making something up. And the person came back with 155 days of home confinement because they had a home and a job and those kind of things. The case manager's recommendation, that paperwork, everything that's signed, the progress reports, the halfway house conditions, all of that stuff, is just part of a referral. Mm-hmm. It is a recommendation. Mm-hmm. It is not, I got a date.
Right.
It's, I got a recommendation.
I got a recommendation.
And I think, that's again, right, it's important to use the right words. How many times have you been on the phone and someone says something and our first question is that a team or has the date come back from the RRM? And then they're like, I don't know. And it's important to know that. So, and I know folks, and the question was, well, what else can we do about this? Like kind of in general. So the June 17th memo that gave more halfway house, or I'm sorry, let me back up, gave more home confinement because of how it was now determining the home confinement eligibility date. So individuals are able to get more home confinement, the maximum amount that they can get legally, not beyond what the law allows. Mm-hmm. Also, the very same memo said, we are going to reserve halfway house beds for individuals that need a placement. So that means if you have a home and you've got that intact relationship and, you know, things are okay, you don't have a need. You are a low need, low risk individual. So they're going to put you in home confinement. Let you get out of the prison system early. You're still under your sentence, but we're going to get you out of the prison, get you into home, and you're going to hang out in home confinement for the last few months of your sentence is different than you need a home. Now, this wasn't asked, and I know we've talked about it, but I feel obligated as a former case manager to say this. We have been asked regularly. So should I just tell them I'm a homeless?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Aside from the fact that trying to manipulate a longer placement by lying to your case manager is what we call criminogenic behavior, right? And that's why those are kind of those thinking errors is what gets people to prison. And we're wanting you to leave and stay gone. We'll set that aside for the minute. Don't lie to your case manager. It is so easy.
And it doesn't.
Go ahead.
Doesn't that make it automatically a public law placement when you fly the homeless flag?
Not necessarily. What they're doing is they're trying to get that maximum 12 months.
Right.
So, I'm homeless. Okay. But the case manager is not stupid. Neither is the RRM. They can look at your paperwork. Okay. Your case manager can read your emails, listen to your phone calls, right? Your mail is reviewed.
You're returning to a $2 million. Your house is $2 million that you're on your release.
You know, anyway, you get money from home. You get regular visits. You know, your wife or your husband is still your wife or your husband. Like, you have a place. Lying to your case manager is not a good idea, because when you are caught in that manipulating, you could very well end up with less than they would have recommended to start with. So please don't do that. I'm just saying, just please don't do that. We've had that question. Oh, should I just tell them I'm home? No. Now, you asked a question about public law. Great question. A lot of people don't know what public law is. So public law placement is when an individual, A, is homeless, actually homeless, and for whatever reason, the Bureau is not able to get sufficient pre-release placement time. So let's say someone who is actually homeless, but also has some unresolved pending charges, and they're not going to be able to get Second Chance Act placement. So they're just going to hang out. Maybe they are getting FSA credit toward release. Maybe they're not. But they're going to stay with the Bureau until their release date. Because under the Second Chance Act, we also can't get someone who has unresolved pending charges, which is likely to result in their arrest or confinement, is not going to be put into a halfway house. Because that sets up a situation of a technical escape. And those are bad. So what happens is technical escapes are bad. So then what happens is the case manager, it's a lot of paperwork. It really
How many U.S. Marshals flyers did I do And those walkaways. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. And the letters to the judges and everybody else, it's a lot of work. And all because you had a pending charge that the Bureau institution staff, for whatever reason, missed. And put your paperwork. And not all the time missed. Sometimes it's a matter of jurisdictions don't load the data. So the only way the Bureau knows that there's a pending charge is if that jurisdiction entered the information into the NCIS system and NCIC system. Anyway, if the technical escapes are bad, back to public law. So then what happens is, get me off track there. What happens with public law is then the case manager reaches out to the probation office where you were sentenced and says, hey, I got this dude. This is his situation. And he's got no place to go. And I'm looking at a shelter. Do you want to look at a public law placement? Do you want to modify his conditions of supervised release? And so then what happens? And a lot of times, like when I was a case manager, I explained, hey, dude, I'm reaching out to probation. This is what they're probably going to do.
But this is where the rubber hits the road. Now you're not just doing paper. You're living somewhere on your paper.
Right. Because then what happens is probation will send back documents for the case manager to put in front of the person to sign them. And what he's signing or she's signing is they are waiving their right to a hearing, waiving their right to an attorney, and are okay with the judge modifying their conditions of supervised release. And then the new conditions of supervised release come back with a halfway house placement up to either 120 or 180 days for the first period of your supervised release. So then the Bureau does a halfway house packet, sends it in, gets you a placement, your release date comes, and you immediately go to the halfway house, not home. Because now that halfway house placement has become a condition of your supervised release, the first part of your supervised release. And I'm not saying it's not a good thing when, you know, I've had cases where that was my only option. This guy was looking at shelters.
That's 100%. You know,
it's a difficult situation, you know, and sometimes probation offices are really helpful when, you know, a case manager reaches out and says, hey, I got a person with some issues and he really needs some assistance. Sometimes they're really helpful. I had a case, years ago, I was actually a case management coordinator at the time, and probation didn't want him back. And I had to explain to probation that you're the sentencing district. You don't have a choice. And they were not helpful. And we actually had the individual, we had him sign a consent to release information and reached out to the local Catholic charities for that diocese that had an offender outreach program. They had a brother who had oversight. And so then I'm sending him out, and this is back where you would just do your MapQuest maps. This was
You know, it's pretty interesting. You know, New Mexico had New Mexico was my territory here in South Central, and man, so I'd have guys on home confinement in Farmington, which is in the Four Corners area, Durango, Colorado. Whatever. So if you're on home confinement or they're a homeless person on public law, and they had just transitioned out of the Albuquerque halfway house to start their paper halfway house shelter, if you will, sponsored by probation there. So this is not a life hack. I mean, this is something that's used when very necessary for a truly homeless person. I want to ask you this next question.
Sure.
So let's say working with an inmate at a medium or a penitentiary, done a lot of time, okay? 15 plus years, a lot of time. Now, I'm going to tell you my beliefs. I believe that person should get as much time reintegrating into society as much as possible. I hear you. But certainly with somebody like that, you just wouldn't perfunctorily give them a home confinement because they had a home.
No, they're going to need transition. If they're actually if they're actually at the penitentiary level, and I will tell you, as a penitentiary case management coordinator, I hated to be in that position. Ideally, I wanted to see that guy transition down to a medium and maybe to a low, because the reality is penitentiary to halfway house is
a stretch.
You want to talk about some serious whiplash, and right. and there's a lot of rules. You know, I mean, you would think, okay, you're in a penitentiary, you're used to a lot of rules. You got the bureau rules, and yeah, maybe you got count time, and maybe you got a watch card because you got to report in, you know, but now you're at halfway house. You got all the bureau rules, all the halfway house rules. Then there's the laws on the community, and this person wants me to do this. And then, unlike being in a penitentiary where you're incarcerated with other people of similar mindsets in terms of, you know, and I think you know what I'm going to say, the notion of an inmate versus a convict. That's a mentality, and certain petty stuff just isn't tolerated. And so now you're at a halfway house,
cutting in the line at the chow hall. You go get stuck or something, right? Yeah,
you've done all this time in a penitentiary with a certain expectation of how people deal with you and respect and all these other things, and now you go to a halfway house and you're sharing a room with someone who did, and I'm gonna pick on him for a minute, but some 21 month white collar fraud case who thinks he's above all of this. And has a little bit of an attitude, and he's been in camp, but not much, very long in a camp, because he only had a 21 month sentence. And now you're dealing with someone who spent the last 2 decades in a penitentiary.
Right.
So, I mean, I really want to see more transition than penitentiary to halfway house.
You know, it is good to go from an institution to a halfway house and then home confinement. I understand that. However, like you said, that could also run the other direction. If you were at a federal prison camp going to a halfway house that has penitentiary inmates in the half, you know what I mean? And now you're in an open bay dorm, and I mean football field open bay dorm with these folks. That's a whole different
vibe. And you know, prior to FSA, and I know we've mentioned this before on the show, it was pretty standard. If you were at a camp, you were going to direct home confinement. Very, very few people that are in the camp need halfway house placement, truly need halfway house placement. And they're going to direct home confinement. And I know for a fact, my last institution, I bet you maybe 1 out of 10, 1 out of 15 was actually a halfway house referral. They were all direct home confinement.
And on any given week, you and I get calls from clients that we assisted to get them out of the institution, but they are hoping and waiting and praying to get their home confinement date to get out of the halfway house.
Yeah, because the halfway houses, they're not the Hilton. Like, they're not. Some of the halfway houses have both federal and state offenders in them. And for someone who's been in federal custody, you know, the types of offenses that you see in federal incarceration are very different than you would in the state facilities. It's just, it's two different jurisdictions. It's just a different type of criminal behavior. But some of these same halfway houses are using joint, you know, they have joint contracts.
Okay.
So, very good. How are we doing?
We're okay. Yeah, keep going with the questions.
Okay, so let's see. Well, and this really dovetails into what we were talking about is, can you explain the remedy from a case manager's perspective of how to get maximum halfway house under Second Chance Act? You need to need it, you know? Now, when I was a case manager and folks talked to me about their release plans, you know, I wanted to know, are you going back to the place you lived before you were in prison? Are you going back to that intact relationship? You know, likelihood as an adult, a spousal partner relationship. Or are you going to your brothers, because he's willing to give you a place to hang your head until you get your life back together. Those are two different presidential plans, right?
Right.
One is permanent. One is, this was your home before you went to prison. You're going back to your home.
Right.
Another is, you're going back somewhere. Did your marriage fall apart while you were in prison? We see that happen. I actually kind of see it more among white collar cases. You know, there's a lot of feelings of betrayal, and the marriage just doesn't make it. So now you're not going back. You know, that support system you had, that home you went to, you're going somewhere else. Are you going back? Some places are going, their guys are going back to the same job they had.
And we had a call this morning. Somebody, has a elderly, a very sick relative. And it's like, okay, can you get us some of the medical paperwork to substantiate this person needing your assistance in their care?
Right, right. And that's a legitimate situation.
Sure.
Everybody wants to get out of prison sooner. But like any resource, halfway house bed space is finite. And under the Second Chance Act, that bed space is about that need and that transition. Longer incarceration. Yes, you kind of need a little bit longer off ramp there. You need a little bit longer ramp as to kind of move into that transition from incarceration to being in the community, and then, to home confinement. Totally legitimate. If you can't go back to the job you had at all, some folks have gotten themselves in trouble and have lost licensing or had been barred from going back into that industry, but by way of their supervised release. You might be able to go back to it once you're off paper, but while you're on paper, you're not allowed to, engage in any kind of, a lot of times you'll see that with financial crimes, and that means anything. Like, you can't be a payroll clerk. Like, you can't go back to anything related to where you're responsible for any kind of money or personal data or things like that. So again, it's going to be individual things, but you've got to approach it from that standpoint.
And submitting a very meaningful and accurate release plan that talks about really what your needs really are at release. And that way things can go a lot better,
I think your mic just messed up. Your volume just got really quiet, or that maybe it's really tucked under. Yeah, I can't. You're very soft spoken right now, and that's not you.
No, it's not me. Excuse me.
There you go.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. It's just you're soft spoken. Your volume isn't what it was.
Here we go. That's better, I think.
Okay. Let's see. I'm looking at, I've got to read what, this was a question that was asked and then the person actually called. And so I wanted to just share it because it's good information.
Okay.
By law, the Bureau has to release someone to the district where they were sentenced. And if you think about it, a judge sentenced a person to a period of incarceration and a period of supervised release. So that supervised release was from that court. So you have to go back to that district. If you want to go elsewhere, you have to go through what's called a relocation. And that's where your case manager will send a relocation package, which includes your judgment and your PSR and a progress report and a supervised release plan. They'll send it out to probation in whatever the district was, whatever that new district was. And a probation officer's going to go out to that residence, and they're going to kind of check out the home. They're going to confirm the person actually wants you to come live there. So if you're sitting in prison and, your loved one is looking to do a relocation, like, everybody's got to be on board with that relocation plan. And then once that home is inspected and everything's good, if probation is going to approve it, they will do a letter and send it back to the case manager saying this is approved. And then that letter goes into the halfway house paperwork. So if a relocation needs to happen, it has to happen before the halfway house paperwork can be sent to the reentry office, because it has to be included. And probation, because we have had this happen, probation can deny a relocation. It's totally within their right to do so. And if you have a relocation denied, your options are to offer another release plan or to release to your sentencing district, spend some time on supervised release, and then work with your probation officer to do a probation office to probation office transfer. Some areas are just very reticent to take relocation cases. It's one thing if you're out on supervised release and now they've got one probation officer saying, yeah, he's not a problem, he's doing well, we're going to do this transfer. That's different than coming from an institution. Had two questions, actually, it's kind of the same, and we've already sort of touched on it a little bit, is the idea about home confinement. And if you're sitting in halfway house, when do you get to go to home confinement? If you're sitting in halfway house on FSA time, right? Mm-hmm. Those 10 and 15 days that you racked up, you had 365 off your sentence, and you are in halfway house and you have passed your FSA placement, conditional placement date.
Right.
You are eligible to go to home confinement date wise. That doesn't mean it's guaranteed, but you are eligible to go because there is zero restrictions on a home confinement under FSA. If you're either not getting FSA time or you're in halfway house only on SCA time, or you're getting FSA plus some SCA time, right? While you're doing the SCA time, that's that 10% or 180 days, whichever is less. And it's 10% of your sentence. So if you have a 30-month sentence, 30 times 30 is 900, 10% is 90 days-ish. When they do the calculation, it's an exact number of days. I'm just doing a quick math. But if you have a 30-month sentence, you got about 90 days of home confinement eligibility under the Second Chance Act. That was what changed with the June 17th memo, was how do they calculate that date? So if you're sitting there and you got an FSA placement date, plus you've got 180 days of home confinement eligibility, you take that placement date plus the home confinement eligibility, or actually minus, because you back it up, and that's your date. Going to recommend, and we said this a couple weeks ago, we are saying this to everybody, the halfway house providers are contractors. They do not have access to your FSA information. Before you leave the institution, get your halfway house paperwork. Get your FSA time credit assessment worksheet. The newest one, you know, even if it's a month old, as long as it's after the end of July when we rolled out the new date information, because that's your worksheet that you can take to your halfway house provider to say, hey, I know you don't have the FSA information, but here's my worksheet from the Bureau. Can you talk to the RRM? I need to get my home approved, blah, 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 blah. So
there you go.
That's that.
Okay.
And that was actually my last question.
Awesome. What a
country. That worked out perfect.
I know. We got a little bit of a late start here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that was so my bad. I will admit to it.
Compensate that so we don't get the producer mad at us. All right, then. The fantastic show today here on Around the Block. We may have some guests. We may have to do some reruns. We'll see what October brings. But make sure you tune in, because if we're on, it's going to be exciting and very meaningful and informative.
Do you want to do a quick plug before we close out for the books?
Yep.
For our books, Second Chance Act. We haven't done one. We're going to do, as Bruce mentioned, we have so many questions with Second Chance Act. We're actually going to do a Second Chance Act book. So we've got the Blue Book, Unlocking Federal Time Credits. Make sure when you do the search for it, you look for the second edition. If you go to the regular one, it'll be say it's out of print. And then the green book is on classification and designation. Also super important books.
Awesome stuff. So yeah, please get those on Amazon and come by our Facebook group, our YouTube channel. And we're on Apple Podcast as well as on LA Talk Radio. All of our shows are archived. You can download them and view them for free. It's awesome. Okay, everybody. Thanks for stopping by. We'll see you here next time on Around the Block. Take care, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Gittings, only on LA Talk Radio.